This is Barbara Lee, and we're going to talk about hearing impairment this morning. First of all, and even though there are just a few of you here, I'm just going to go ahead if that's all right. Hearing impairment is the single most chronic disability in the United States. And that's kind of amazing. There are more people who are hearing impaired than people having most all other diseases combined. Statistically, there are over 16 million people who have some form of hearing impairment, some inability to understand either sounds or speech. When you get down to people having a loss in both ears, significant bilateral loss, it's about 6.5 million. And when you get down to people who are deaf, such as myself, for whom the everyday sounds of life have no meaning whatsoever, there are almost 1.7 million. And those numbers seem to be rising every year, primarily from all kinds of reasons. Over a third of all people over 65 are hearing impaired, and very few of them want to recognize it or acknowledge it. There are three prime considerations when talking about hearing impairment. One, and I don't know if it's necessary to use the board here, but one is age of onset. Those people who lose hearing at birth or who do not have hearing at birth have by far the most difficult time because they have very limited conceptual understanding. The average deaf adult who is educated has a fifth grade reading level, even college graduates. It's interesting, 90% of deaf kids have hearing parents, and 90% of all hearing impaired parents have hearing children, which I think is kind of fascinating. So when you look at the age of onset, either the congenital loss, either prelingually before language or prevocationally before age 19, then you can also look at the adventitious or the acquired deafness such as I have. I lost my hearing at age 35. And although it was still hereditary, it's hereditary. I have two cousins who lost hearing in their middle 30s. The inner auditory meatus, the canal from the inner ear to the brain, has calcified and does not vibrate. My ears are fine, but it's the connection from the inner ear to my brain that does not work properly. You look at the type of loss. There are several kinds of loss, but primarily you go from the conductive loss, which really means that you need amplification, to over here the sensory neural. Sensory neural loss, and for that, it's clarity that's the problem, not loudness. And beneath that, there is a mixed loss. So people can be bothered by either conductive, by sensory neural, or by a mixed loss. I, for instance, have both. Sometimes I can hear sounds, but even if I hear sounds, it's not clear enough to understand what they mean, what they are. So the age of onset, the type of loss, and then the degree of severity just really make a difference in how one functions. Now, there are some differences in people who have congenital loss and people who lose hearing later in life. For instance, people who are born deaf, for them, English is a second language. For the rest of us, we have no problem at all expressing ourselves but we have trouble receiving information and receiving language. A person congenitally deaf probably is very fluent in sign language. Welcome. Those of us who lose hearing later in life, some of us learn sign and others don't. I, for one, find it very helpful. I'm walking around the house and I find that I don't use S's very well. And my housemate will go like this to me, make the S sign on her hand, which means shape up. You know, be more careful when you speak. Or if I don't understand a word, we were talking about pop, and I don't, pop meaning soda pop, and I thought she said, go get the mop, and I came out with the mop and pop look-alike on the lips, and so she'll give me a P, or she'll give me the sign for pop, rather than saying the word, or as she says it, she'll give me the pop sign. And that's a very good assistance mechanism for me, and I'm sure for many other people who are hearing impaired as well. Most people who are deaf from birth have a very healthy identity. They know who they are, they've known from birth that they're different. Basically, they've accepted it, particularly if they have deaf parents or hearing impaired parents. Those who have hearing parents usually have a more difficult time because it's the parents who haven't accepted the hearing impairment, and then the kids don't either. But at any rate, it's those of us who are deafened or who have a hearing impairment later in life who have by far the most difficulty. It's hard to accept it. It's hard to say, excuse me, but I'm hearing impaired, and if I ignore you, you know, I don't mean to do that. Just tap me on the shoulder, get my attention somehow. I do that at every meal when I sit down to a table here. But people have to be comfortable to reach out and say, hey, I'm hearing impaired, you know, and just give them a tip, you know, tap me on the shoulder, or just to let people know where you're coming from so they don't think you're ignoring them. Academically, people who are born deaf, as I mentioned, have a fifth grade reading level. Even the brightest of them, at least that's the average. Where those of us who are acquiring our hearing impairment later in life don't really have that problem. We can reach whatever heights we choose to. Deaf people can too, but the obstacles are so great. People who are deaf from birth have a very normal psychological adjustment in most cases. I mean, there are differences as in other population. But those of us who acquire our deafness or our hearing impairment have more difficulty. I can speak for myself. Coming up here is wonderful. I love Holden, but I don't like the isolation. I feel isolated enough as a human being who doesn't hear. Not hearing the little banter up by the patio there, people talking and overhearing conversations. You're isolated, it's silence. You come up here and if you don't have a significant person with whom to share, there are not people that you can say, I just feel so alone up here. And you do. We went to Stehekin the other day, and I was on the boat with someone, another volunteer from here, and we got back, and the next day, yesterday, I apologized to her. I said, I'm sorry I pulled away from you yesterday. But the pulling away was because there was wind on the boat. I couldn't hear. I couldn't concentrate to speech read. We got there. I wanted to take a look at some photos and she wanted to do something else. And I just had to pull away. I just had to withdraw. And I'm aware of that withdrawal. And that withdrawal happens with all of us as we lose our hearing. Because it's too frustrating to get in the middle of conversations, the middle of groups. I used to be a real groupy person. enjoying large crowds and groups. Now I have two or three people to my home one time, and that is plenty sufficient. It's too hard to concentrate. It's too hard to communicate meaningfully. As far as family communications with congenitally deafened people, it's very limited. As I mentioned, you don't hear the conversation at the breakfast table. You don't know that the radio is on and there's bad weather coming. You don't hear the bad jokes around you. And you think, oh, that's no loss. But it's a loss because we are educated in such a casual way, many of us, within our homes. It's not sitting down and saying, now this is what we believe and this is what we think. But it's hearing comments, and it's hearing attitudes that people just don't make plain statements about. But it's things that you learn by just being and picking up casually. And those kinds of communication limitations are not placed on a person in a hearing family. So the causes of hearing impairment vary, not only from birth defects, not only from viruses, not only from diseases and drugs, head injuries, tumors, whatever, but it can be any number of things. And as we get older, somehow our bodies kind of give out a little bit here and there. Most folks who are older, and older is over 40, have a little bit loss of hearing, and it's called presbycusis. It's when your ears just don't quite function as they have in the past. Some people wonder about speech reading. I was telling Edna this morning, only 26 to 33% of the words in the English language are distinguishable on the lips. And of those that are, 50 to 60% of the words we say look like some other word. And so when you're speech reading, you're doing a whole lot of guessing. Guessing in context, hopefully, but guessing. So I, for one, feel very gifted as a speech reader, and I know, in fact, that I am. But I also know when I make mistakes, they're beauties, and they're big ones. Some of us as hearing impaired people can't tell how loud we speak or how softly. Yes?
You do beautifully. Now, you can't hear yourself speak.
No. I may do beautifully, but I have two examples. Yesterday, four times in the dining room, Laura Lee, a friend of mine here with whom I was sitting, said, I cannot hear you. Barbara, speak up. I cannot hear you. And then about, I suppose it was several months ago now, I was at a church listening to a sermon, and I really didn't like what I heard. And I leaned over to the person next to me thinking I was whispering and said, hogwash, and it was right out loud during the sermon. So I have learned to keep my mouth shut. Yeah.
But I must tell you that last night a group of us were saying that were you a pastor in our churches, we could worship with you and your voice, the content of your message. We were just real.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
She is a pastor.
Well, see, now I do not know her history or her background. So,
thank you. That makes me feel good. I appreciate that. Anyway, we're talking about speech reading. That 26 to 33% of the words are distinguishable on the lips. 50 to 60% of the words we use look like another word. For instance, you can say, do you like Fridays? And I can also say, do you like fried eggs? And it looks the very same on the mouth. Bean, mean, look alike. Make, bake. Pee, be. What are some other words that look alike? Keep, heap. So there are a lot of words that it's just guesswork. That's simply what it is. And the success of someone using speech reading depends on a number of things. Number one, your familiarity with the language. Number two, how people move their mouths. If they talk like this in order to help people understand, it does not help at all. If you just speak normally, it is much easier to understand. There are some people whose mouths simply do not move like others. And that is very difficult. There is a young man here that I like very much, but for love nor money, I can't understand him. Because his mouth doesn't move when he talks. He talks like this. And you can't understand. People with beards. Beards are fine unless they're clipped. There's a man with a gorgeous red beard here this week. Beautiful. I love it. And it's a good thing he's about 6'5", because I can stand underneath him and see, look up and can see. But from a distance, I can't understand anything because the mustache covers his top lip. How many people sit and talk like this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've had to ask many people in the last couple weeks to move their hands because you just simply can't see. When Leo Bustead was giving his excellent talk yesterday, he was sitting like this and reading. No way can you understand when somebody has their head down. They have to have their head up so you can see what they're saying. Lightness and darkness. Many of you who have been in Koinonia when I have shared some sessions have noticed that they always put a black covering over the windows. Because if there is light coming from behind you, then your face is dark and I have no idea what is being said. Need to have the light coming on the front of you. In other words, my back, if this were a window, and you were standing, and I was there. There would be no way. What's happening? Anybody know how to work these things? If this were a window, and you, Evie, were standing here, there's no way that I could look at you and understand what you were saying. But if I, as the hearing impaired person, can have my back to the light so that the light shines on your face, it makes a whole lot of difference. One of the other things that happens with hearing impaired people is that you can ask us questions. Paul Bowe said the same thing the other day. And it happened to me, and I always said I wouldn't do it. You nod yes if you think you understand something and you know perfectly well. You have no idea what's been said. But it's just kind of that empty, because it's easier to say than to ask for clarification. I don't know if any of you do that. It's easy to do. You talked about sign language, that's another topic. There's something they call AMSLAN, American Sign Language. It is a language all its own, with its own syntax, its own everything. You can say, use the English words, you can say train gone, Zoom finish. And those are the English words, but what it means is I've said it once, I'm not going to say it again, just kind of cool your guns. And so the English words and the American Sign Language meaning are two very, very different things. It's a conceptual and visual language versus a word language. As a person who lost hearing later in life, I prefer, personally, rather than that conceptual language, I prefer that words be translated word for word, such as, this is an English class, instead of, well, that's not a good example because it's, whatever. If you say, I want to go to the store. In American Sign Language, you can say, store I, or you can say, go store. It's just nothing but concepts. There are no pronouns necessarily, or adjectives. It might be the look on your face rather than the sign itself. So it's a very, very different kind of understanding. There's a very difference in use of sign language depending upon who you're talking to. If I'm in the deaf community and associating with people in the deaf community, I will tend to use more conceptual signs. If I'm with hearing people, such as myself, people who have been hearing, such as myself, I will use word-for-word sign. As far as children are concerned, they call it the 100 Years' War, whether you should use only speech reading or whether you should use sign language. And after all these years, they've finally come to the conclusion, or most experts and scholars have, that you should use whatever you can to get concepts and messages across. They call it total communication, talking and signing at the same time. I prefer that myself. For instance, at seminary, I had an interpreter for my classes. I would watch her mouth because I'm primarily a speech reader. But the signs were incredibly important and supportive because I could see that out of my peripheral vision. And when I had questions about meaning, I could get the meaning from the signs. And that was very, very helpful. As an invisible disability, deafness poses some problems. As a gifted speech reader, I was at one point in my life accused of malingering by not... people said I could hear and I could not. They said, you don't listen to us, you don't respond to us. I said, that's not true. And it's invisible. People don't know. So I went again to have my hearing tested, and the otolaryngologist said, Barbara, you have a problem that is shared by many. He said, you wear ear aids that are behind your ear. When your hair is long, and it was then, your aids don't show. He said, I recommend you have cords attached to the back of your aids and that you stick them down your collar and into your bra straps. He said, at least then people can see there is a disability. He said, even if they're not attached to anything but your bra straps. Which is kind of fascinating. But people respond differently to you if they know there is a reason for your ignoring them or missing what they say, than if they just think you've got your nose in the air. When one is developing hearing problems, the world begins to shrink. And I don't know if any of you have experienced that. Listening is hard. Sounds are indistinct. Eventually you avoid crowds, family gatherings, church gatherings. People who have been active in LCW for years pull away and say, I think I'm going to stay home today. Or people who have been on church council say, I think I'm just going to let somebody else take over now. And what it amounts to when you talk to them in many cases is that they can no longer hear, they can no longer function, and instead of admitting it, they retreat. And it's very, very, very common. And so the result is isolation and loneliness and frustration. I mentioned the boat ride and how frustrating it was to be with somebody and want to share times with them, but to honestly feel I could not do that. And I'm a gifted speech reader. But I was very much aware of being isolated and set apart. Makes a difference. People have to change their living style. It was a summer evening, a hot summer evening, and I wanted to leave my room and go downstairs on the living room floor where it was cooler. And so I took my sheet and my pillow and went downstairs. And I got down there, it was in the middle of the night, and I found that my housemate had already brought her sheet and pillow down on the living room floor because the air conditioner wasn't hooked up yet. And as I laid down, I said out loud, what time is it? And there was no response. And so I said, what time is it? Knowing that I had seen her eyes open a minute before when I plopped down on the floor. And all of a sudden, I could see in the darkness, she was standing up, she went over to the light, she turned on the light, she walked across the room, she came over to me and she said, it's 3:30, but do you realize that because you asked me what time it was, I had to totally wake up, get up, turn on the light, walk over here, tell you the time, now I have to go back, turn off the light, lie down, and I'm not going to sleep for 2 hours. I still think of myself in many cases as hearing. I forget that just asking someone what time it is in the middle of the night is a big deal. But it is. And then, you know, people pull away. I can't make a telephone call without somebody else being on the line. There's no confidentiality. Zero. Zilch. And every time I make a call, either my housemate or one of the nuns next door or someone has to be there to assist. It's not fun. People who tell me, I wish I could get away from that telephone for a while, kind of get to me. Because do you know what it's like not to be able to use a telephone? I guess I'd like to make three suggestions for people who are feeling they have some kind of hearing impairment. And sometimes we don't know, but try and get some good medical help. Go to an otolaryngologist first, a medical doctor who specializes in ears. See what they say, if there is some medical way your hearing can be improved. 9 times out of 10, they will refer you to an audiologist, a person with graduate education in testing hearing. And then that person can assist you in, if it's appropriate, getting a hearing aid that is appropriate for you. Beyond that, you would go to a hearing aid dealer. So oftentimes, you see ads in the newspapers for hearing aids, and people say, ah, there's a hearing aid for $359. That's a good deal. But you don't know that that hearing aid is going to meet your needs. When President Reagan got a canal aid, an in-the-ear hearing aid, everybody thought, that's the newest thing. We need one. That's what I want. It won't show. But it also doesn't work for all people. It depends on your loss and the kind of loss that you have. And there's a difference, I think, too, that people need to know between hearing aids and glasses. I take off my glasses and I cannot see. I couldn't see who you wouldn't be able to recognize you people, even in the first row. It's a matter of fact. I put them on and I can see clearly. If I take off my hearing aids, I can't hear. If I put them in, I still can't hear, for certain not clearly. But I might get some sounds that protect me safety-wise. So a hearing aid is totally different than glasses. Glasses correct most of the time to 20/20 vision or something close to that. Hearing aids do not, but they just provide assistance primarily for safety. They provide amplification. They cannot provide clarity. Tips. If you're talking to somebody, try and get their attention. Again, feel free to tap someone on the shoulder or on the arm or give them a kick or whatever you want to do. Just get their attention first. Speak clearly at a normal rate. If you're changing the subject, let somebody know. You know, we're no longer talking about this, but we're talking about something else. Use some facial expression. Last night, Kathleen, who's saying, she is just such an amazing woman to me because she smiles as she sings. And I can sense, I can't hear what she's singing, but I can sense by looking at her, her body would show what she was doing. And that's the kind of expression you need to feel and to sense what's going on around you. And attitudes are so important. I can't tell you how many times people who know I'm deaf and see me standing with a friend will pretend you or me will look at the person standing next to me and say, "And how is she doing today?" What do you mean, how is she doing? I'm there. I'm not invisible. I mean, pretty big to be invisible. But people don't respect you by talking to you. They talk to somebody near you or around you. Or people expect that because you don't hear, you can't think. And so, if you can't hear, obviously you don't know what's going on or anything else. And that's embarrassing. And it's also frustrating because you know you can think for yourself. You know you're able to handle your own life. But others doubt that because you're disabled. The last thing that I thought I would share before we go on to some questions very quickly is talking about experiences in church and worship. One of the things that is helpful for me is when the pastor has his sermon written out. And if pastors use a manuscript, that's helpful. I know some do not. But to be able to, even though I sit in the front row and look up at him on occasions, and even if I'm doing the liturgy, I'll go sit in front of him during the sermon. And we'll look up at him and watch. There's always a sign language interpreter in our congregation. But still, to be able to watch him, to follow if I choose to do that rather than watching the interpreter, it really is helpful to have that written manuscript. Or even an outline is helpful. Oftentimes, even the music is printed in our bulletin, the words of the songs, the choir anthem. And so you can follow that as well. As far as congregational involvement, many people, many hearing impaired people are shy and they lack the confidence to say, "I want to participate." It's difficult. It's difficult when you feel so isolated anyway to jump in and to do what needs to be done. It's true. Many of us who are disabled need that extra invitation. And it sounds silly, but it's true. There are jobs that those of us who are hearing impaired can do in a church. Granted, we won't be doing telephone work, We won't be making the stewardship calls by phone. But we can do a lot of things one-to-one. You know, there's always altar guild, there's always money counting. There are all kinds of things people can do where their hearing isn't necessarily involved. Again, the social activities and the personal welcome that people need. We talk about social gossip at church, and people say gossip is bad. But gossip is essential to knowing what's going on. Gossip in some settings is really very, very necessary. And it's very necessary for someone to be a part of a community. Now, gossip doesn't necessarily have to be bad, but what I'm talking about is the little comments about people. So-and-so is going on vacation. So-and-so just adopted a child. So-and-so broke an arm last week. These little things that you do not hear, that you miss by not hearing that casual conversation out in the narthex of the church on Sunday morning. I guess the other things to remember are that if you speak to someone and they don't understand, they're not necessarily being a snob. They probably simply don't hear you. I have talked to a number of people in the dining hall who are not wearing aids, but I can talk to them and they don't respond, and I know very well they're hearing impaired. No, there's nothing wrong with me. But I think if they had their hearing tested, they might find out differently. Other people's embarrassment. When I don't hear, when I don't respond, one of the people working outside here, one of the staff people said, I was so embarrassed. I called to you, and then I remembered you couldn't hear. And she says, I looked around to make sure there was no one else who would see what I had done. There's that embarrassment, and hopefully people don't have to feel that way. I'm probably the only clergy person who does the liturgy and starts out the Lord's Prayer, Our Father, and then quits. I start the creed and I say, I believe, and I stand in front of the congregation with my hands folded and don't say another word. Because the congregation speaks at its own pace. And my pace, we have found, is often not the same as theirs. So when it's time to, if we have responsive reading, I will speak, and there's always, without my even saying anything, someone in the front row who will go like this, your turn. They will speak their thing and they'll go, and so that I'll begin. I don't chant the liturgy. I can't. I have no idea where my voice is or what tune I'd be singing, and I couldn't sing even when I did have my hearing. So I don't, and I speak it, and people are accepting of that. And sometimes we just have someone who does have a good voice do the singing parts. So it's no problem. But what I wanted to share with you were just some very basics about the very different kinds of hearing impairment, about the variety of causes, about sign language, about speech reading, about tips, about things we can do in church. You're welcome to ask any questions about any or all of the above, or about my experiences or your experiences or whatever, but I hope we can just have some good time of sharing. Edna.
How do you feel about the congregation standing up and sitting down and standing up and sitting down? If you're hearing impaired and you need to see the pastor or the leader or the person who is giving the general prayer, doesn't the standing up for the congregation frustrate you?
No, it really doesn't for me, because I always sit in the front row. Mm. And even though clergy usually are up in the front, I always leave the front and go sit in the front row.
Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of us aging persons who still sit.
Yeah, back a ways.
Back.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure congregations could try it. If it's more helpful for you to sit rather than to stand, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
You know. In our congregation, we still stand up and sit down, and the three or four of us who are severely hearing impaired are always in the front anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And our altar is very close to the front, and so it's very easy to follow. I'm sure, you know, you can try anything you want to, and I'm sure if your pastor is at all sensitive, he would allow some of those things too.
Another question, that troubles me and perhaps my family is that I don't always wear my hearing aids, and I don't hear them, and if there are guests and they're talking, and I'm not hearing it clearly, I don't even try to hear it clearly. I am withdrawing, and sometimes not hearing if I'm
That's right. Yeah.
And
that's very common.
Well, I'm afraid that's going to increase, and maybe I
probably will.
And maybe, well, anyway, how do I prevent myself from? My daughter-in-law says, "Wear your hearing aid all the time. Put it on in the morning, take it off when you go to bed." But I don't like to do that.
It's easier said than done. Because those of us who wear hearing aids know that there are garbage sounds that we get, and probably more garbage sounds than helpful sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's incredibly difficult to always have that input of noise.
Mm-hmm.
You think of people who are deaf as not being able to hear anything. There are some children in our chalet over here, and they had on some music this morning. And I closed my door and I put a towel along the bottom where the carpet is, because it absolutely felt to me like fingernails coming down a chalkboard.
Oh, really? It's our chalet.
Yes, it is. You didn't hear it.
No.
Well, but their room is, you know, from here to there, from mine.
You heard it.
I hear some sounds, and they're disturbing, very disturbing.
Cutlery on the table. You don't hear that. That was really hits the hearing aid.
Yeah. And so each of us is different in what we receive and what we can understand from what we receive.
Mm-hmm.
Your pulling away in groups is very, very normal.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, you probably will do it more because it's very difficult to concentrate. I remember being in graduate school and taking my classes in science. And I would come home at night and just sob. I don't know if I was sobbing because I was tired. I don't know if I was sobbing because my eyes hurt, and they did, or because of the immense concentration it takes to talk. Even here, to talk to somebody, you need to look at them and you need to concentrate on what they're saying. It's not just information in, information out. It's an effort every single time you try to communicate. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And you'd come home every night just exhausted, just from trying to concentrate on who was talking. Or you get in groups and people are talking, and they're over in Koinonia is a good example. People are sitting in a circle. And all of a sudden, I'm aware that somebody over here is talking and I'm watching them. And then I see everybody's eyes turn, and by the time I get over there, heads are turning the other direction, and I've missed the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea who's been talking or what they've said. So how do you carry on the conversation?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, no, but it's much easier to learn how to utilize a hearing aid when you have more hearing. As you lose your hearing, you lose your discrimination. You can't understand. Words are not as clear. And it's much, much easier to start using a hearing aid when you have some hearing and when you can distinguish what the sounds are.
I miss a lot.
I encourage you to have your hearing tested by a qualified person and to see if an aid will help, because it is much, much better to do it now than later. Later on, when your hearing has degenerated quite a bit, you will hear more and more and more of the, I don't know how, I call them garbage sounds, but it's like a heavy wind. It's like static. Mm-hmm. You hear more of that, and you're able to distinguish far fewer of the meaningful sounds. So I really would encourage you to do that. Yeah. Yeah, Barb.
Differently with different people, but like in the aging process particularly,
yes,
when it's common for hearing to become a problem, is it something that can go quickly, or
sure,
usually, like usually, for instance,
only?
Well, I realize that, but I mean, how long a period is it?
It depends on the people. You can, there was a woman here this past week who was hearing in the morning, and her husband came home from work at night and she couldn't hear a thing. I have a friend who went to bed at night and woke up the next morning and couldn't hear a word. Her marriage went kaput, her kids left. I mean, her whole life went helter-skelter the moment that she lost her hearing. That is not uncommon. My hearing went in, I guess I must have had a loss for some time that I didn't realize. Some of you have heard me tell that a colleague of mine came and sat next to me at the office and said, "Barbara, I think if I were you, I'd have my hearing tested." And I thought she was joking. And a number of weeks, a couple weeks later, I guess, it was a Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock, I remember it vividly. And she came and she sat at my desk and she said, "Barbara, look at me." So I looked at her and she said, "Please go have your hearing tested. If you don't, you're a fool." And she stood up and tears started running down her cheeks and she walked out of my office. And I realized she wasn't joking. And I went and had my hearing tested, and I had a moderate loss in one ear, got my first hearing aid. Within, it was probably less than 6 months, I was a state counseling supervisor for one of our state agencies and was doing training out of town for some of our people. And we had always had very positive feedback, always. And this was awful. You don't listen to us. You don't respond to us. And I said, "Yes, I do. I denied it." They said, "You don't. You don't." And it was just awful. It was one of the worst experiences of my life. And come to find out, I went home, and a man who had traveled up there with me as a colleague left a note on my desk. He said, "Barbara, you don't hear a thing!" Exclamation point. Except he used some other words. And I went and had my hearing tested, and he was right. I'm profoundly deaf. The ordinary sounds of everyday life have no functional meaning for me. I got two aids, and I use my aids primarily for safety. That's their only use to me. Except that I missed an ambulance by that much not long ago. But you deny what is the case. Evie.
I think it's also insidious. Like Barbara said, you're not aware of so I have impairment in one ear, and how I found out was in telephoning a soft, very soft speaking person I couldn't hear. So I just accidentally just switched, and I couldn't get over the difference from this ear to this ear. It was so insidious as it, came.
I don't think you would mind if I share that with the first day you were here. I haven't, Evie and I worked together 1964, many years ago, and hadn't seen each other more than once, maybe since. And I saw her up here and was just amazed to see her at Holden. We sat at the same table, and I talked to her, and she didn't respond to me.
Three times.
Yeah, and so I thought,
she was sitting on this side.
Across the table on this side. And so I'm very much aware when people don't respond. But you're right, it's insidious. You just do not, you don't know what you're missing. Mm-hmm. I denied that I wasn't responding, wasn't listening, and not realizing that the only people I paid attention to were the people within my straight range of vision. And none of these people who were sitting over here did I pay any attention to at all. Because I had no idea they were talking.
Yeah. You know what's the worst? And that is, now I can hear a bird if it's close, but a bird off there. I walk up with my husband to the Kierkegaard Library early in the morning, and he's hearing a bird. Mm-hmm. And I say, what is that, Edna? I don't hear it.
Yeah.
Which doesn't mean that I don't hear birds, but the bird in the distance, I don't hear it. That's bad, not to hear the bird.
You know what I miss up here?
Right.
Is going down by the creek and not hearing the water rushing down.
Oh, I hear that without my hearing aid.
See, and I don't hear that. I go down there and I would love to hear that. Mm-hmm. And it just totally passes me by.
Mm-hmm.
So there are things that, you know, you talk about going on a retreat. Everybody thinks a retreat is so wonderful. You talk about the silence and all this kind of thing. I have a heck of a time with retreats. I don't want any more silence.
I wish
I have
Lutheran
enough.
Retreats were silent.
What?
I have led Lutheran women in retreat. And I had then gone to a Catholic retreat, and the Catholics observe silence.
Yeah.
The Lutheran women just chatter, 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 chatter.
Well, the idea of retreat,
though, is
being silent and set apart, mm-hmm. in many cases.
Yeah.
And I have real trouble with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, retreat is an opportunity to share with one or two people,
mm-hmm.
in a very meaningful, in-depth kind of way.
If only they would do that.
That's right, that's right. But it's just a different understanding and from a different beginning,
mm-hmm.
from a different mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Other questions? We're kind of getting off the topic here.
I'm waiting for you to say something. She has worked with mentally handicapped people for 19 years.
But I had, before I started working with the mentally handicapped, we had a school for deaf children in our education building in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I had was asked one day to fill in as a teacher because the teacher became ill. And I had a little help by watching and observing the teachers, but that was all. And there was a young boy by the name of Mark who became so irritated because I did not understand what he was saying. And he was sure he was speaking clearly. Now, at that time, they did not want to use sign language. They wanted the children to be, they were in a hearing world and they wanted them to use. But in my frustration, I tried this body English to let him understand that I just did not understand and I felt sorry.
This is part of what they called the 100 Years War. And parents who were trying to be good to their children were saying, you must use your speech, you must learn speech reading in order to get along in the hearing world. And after years and years and years of this kind of banter between that and people who thought sign language was helpful. They found that the children who were able to use sign language advanced so much further than those who were limited to speech reading. And those who were able to use sign language and speech reading advanced further yet. And so it was only in the last, probably 1959, when all of a sudden schools for the deaf, for hearing impaired persons, started using what they called total TC, total communication. And that has just made an incredible difference. But still, there are such wide gaps of understanding and limitation.
Yes, I agree with you on that, because we did have a class of retarded children who were deaf in our school later on when I was teaching. And they were giving all of the people a course in sign language, hopefully, to help them.
I just never could learn it.
It's very difficult. It was very hard for me to learn it, particularly since I knew I would have to use it. Mm-hmm. We're kind of going over time.
But we're learning.
Pardon?
But we're learning.
Well, that's good. I'm glad. Is there anything else? Any last question or comment? Or
we have so many. Do you know Lucy Larson?
No.
Here. Well, her husband ran a camp for handicapped children on Lake Coeur d'Alene, and I cooked there for 10 summers, and my youngsters were there as campers. They had they were about 2/3 handicapped and 1/3. Children who had no handicap. And you see those, my children both learned the sign language while they were up there with these deaf children.
It's very difficult to learn. It takes a long time to become proficient. I receive sign language well, but I don't send it as competently as I receive it, because I really don't have anybody to send it to. I still exist in the hearing world. I have friends in the deaf world, but my life is in the hearing world. I share a home with a hearing person. I work in a hearing church, although we have some deaf people with whom I sign. I can function in the hearing world, but I don't function as well in the deaf world for a number of reasons. One is our understandings are so totally different. Not that one is better or one is worse. We're simply different. Most deaf adults have grown up in residential schools, and their conceptual understanding, as I've said 3 or 4 times this morning, is very limited. Not because they're not bright, but simply because it's very difficult to get information into one's head when you don't have auditory input. Yes?
Now, as we are growing older.
Yes.
I notice that many of us do not enunciate as we used to. Probably it's because we are lazy, or probably it's because, well, I just don't know.
Part of it
is our hearing that
yes.
And we are thinking that others do not enunciate.
Yes, yes. Most of the time, that's the difference. You probably enunciate, I mean, as we get older, all of us become a little bit sloppy in the way we speak. But I would say, and studies show, that most people who think others are not enunciating clearly are people who have hearing impairment problems themselves. It's because we are not receiving clearly, not necessarily because others are not speaking clearly. I think we're going over time, but I thank you for coming.